All right, let's jump into a deep dive today on Genesis chapters 3 and 4.
Okay.
We're going to unpack some huge stories here.
Yeah.
The fall, Adam and Eve, the forbidden fruit, Cain and Abel.
Really iconic stories. And like you said, we're going to unpack them because I think people have some misunderstanding.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
About these stories that are so important.
Absolutely. And to help us navigate this, we have a lecture by Dr. Elaine Phillips.
Oh, she's great.
She really is. She offers a lot of really interesting insights.
Yeah, she does. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about this lecture is right off the bat, she challenges a common idea about the fall.
Okay.
So a lot of people see the fall as this like sudden slip up.
Yeah.
But she describes it more as creation, corruption, correction.
Mm.
It's a small shift, but I think it really emphasizes Adam and Eve making deliberate choices.
Okay, so they knew what they were doing.
Yes, exactly.
So that kind of shifts the way we think about responsibility then.
It does. It does.
Because if it wasn't just an accident, then that changes how we think about the choices we make.
I think so, yeah. And it connects to one of the key themes in these chapters, which is knowledge.
Okay.
Because, you know, one of the most puzzling parts of the story is the serpent tempting Eve with the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Right. The whole your eyes will be opened thing. Yeah.
Right. But what does knowing good and evil even mean?
That's a good question.
I mean, is it that simple?
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Phillips argues that it goes beyond just understanding the difference between right and wrong.
Right.
It's about wanting to define good and evil on your own terms.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, you know, trying to take on God's role.
So it's not just knowing the rules, but making the rules.
Yes. Yes. A power grab.
Which makes the serpent's strategy even more cunning.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
He's playing on Eve's desire for wisdom and autonomy.
Yes, exactly. The serpent doesn't use force.
Right.
It's all temptation, subtle distortion, even twisting God's words, you know, like claiming that God said they couldn't eat from any tree in the garden.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which, of course, wasn't true.
Wasn't true at all.
So, I don't know. It's a tactic that still works today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about how often we are bombarded with messages that tell us to break free.
Oh, yeah.
From limitations to define our own truth.
I know. It's everywhere you look.
But there's often a hidden cost, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Just like Adam and Eve, we can end up feeling ashamed and afraid and alienated from what truly matters.
That's a good point. Speaking of alienation, there's one detail that has always bothered me.
What's that?
God tells Adam and Eve they'll die if they eat the fruit.
Right.
But doesn't that mean they understood what death was before they even experienced it?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
And Dr. Phillips suggests a fascinating possibility. Maybe Adam and Eve witnessed animal death in the world outside Eden.
So you're saying Eden wasn't the only place where life existed?
That's what's so interesting about this idea. If Eden was this oasis of perfection within a larger world that was already experiencing death, I mean, how does that change our understanding of the fall and its impact?
It really makes you think. What was the nature of that world outside Eden?
Yeah.
What was God's purpose in creating this protected space?
Yeah, there's so many questions.
Absolutely.
It really challenges some of our traditional assumptions.
It does. It's a good reminder that there are layers of meaning within these stories that we might not grasp at first glance.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, let's talk about temptation for a second.
Okay.
Because the serpent uses some pretty classic tactics.
He does.
That still feel relevant today. Appealing to pride, weaving deceit, making sin look so tempting.
He's like a masterclass in manipulation.
It really is.
And one of the most interesting parts to me is how Eve adds to God's command.
Oh, you mean when she tells the serpent, you must not touch it?
Yes.
Even though God only said not to eat it.
Exactly. Exactly. Like she's trying to create a safety zone around the rule. But doesn't it kind of backfire?
It seems like it does.
Well, Dr. Phillips suggests that Eve's addition might be a well-intentioned attempt to create a fence around the law.
Hmm.
But it highlights this human tendency to add extra rules and restrictions,
right,
which can often have unintended consequences.
Yeah, we've all been there.
We have.
Trying to control everything, thinking we can outsmart temptation with more rules.
I know, but sometimes that just makes things more complicated.
Absolutely. It's like we become so focused on the don'ts that we forget about the don'ts.
Exactly.
And we miss out on the freedom and joy that comes from just trusting God.
Yes.
And walking in his grace.
Absolutely. Beautifully said.
So they eat the fruit, their eyes are opened, and they're suddenly aware of their nakedness.
Right.
But this isn't just about physical nudity, is it?
No, not at all.
It's a deeper vulnerability. a sense of shame and exposure.
Yeah. It's like realizing we've fallen short
yeah.
of God's standard.
Yeah. And that's when the consequences really start. God confronts Adam and Eve.
Uh-huh.
And he pronounces judgment on each of them. And this is where things get really interesting.
Yes.
Especially the pronouncement to the woman.
Uh-huh.
That line about your desire will be for your husband, but he will rule over you.
Right. It's often misinterpreted.
It is.
Dr. Phillips points out that this isn't meant to be a positive model for marriage.
Okay.
It's a consequence of the fall.
Gotcha.
A distortion of the harmony and equality they once had.
So it's not a prescription for how things should be.
No.
It's a description of how sin can really mess up our relationships.
Exactly. Exactly. It's about power dynamics and control.
Yeah.
Which is so far from what God intended.
Right. But even in this moment of brokenness, God's grace is still present.
Oh, it is.
He provides coverings of animal skin for Adam and Eve.
Yes.
Which, you know, signifies this continued relationship.
It does.
Even in the midst of their disobedience.
And, you know, Dr. Phillips suggests that this could also be foreshadowing the sacrificial system that becomes central to the Old Testament.
It's like this thread of hope running through the whole story.
It is.
This reminder that even when we mess up, God's love and mercy are still there.
Oh, absolutely. It sets the stage for the whole story of redemption that yeah. unfolds throughout the Bible.
It does.
But before we get too far ahead,
right.
let's shift our attention to the story of Cain and Abel.
All right. This is where things take a darker turn.
Oh, yeah.
The first murder in history.
I know.
Fueled by jealousy and resentment.
It's a powerful reminder of the destructive potential of emotions, really.
Yeah.
Cain and Abel both bring offerings to God.
Mm.
But God favors Abel's offering.
Right, because Abel brings the fat portions of his flock.
Yes, and Dr. Phillips highlights that representing, like, the best.
Right, the most valuable part.
Yes, and it makes you wonder, you know, was Cain's offering lacking in
yeah.
quality, maybe even the heart behind it?
It's a good point. So when God favors Abel's offering, Cain gets consumed.
Oh, yeah.
By jealousy and anger.
He does. He does.
And he lets these emotions just fester and grow.
Yes, until they take over completely.
Yeah, and that's where things go so wrong.
It is.
Cain lets those negative emotions dictate his actions.
Yes.
And he commits this horrific act of violence against his brother.
He does. A terrible, terrible act.
It's a stark reminder.
Yeah.
Of how quickly envy and resentment can lead to devastating consequences.
It is. It's a tough story, but an important one.
It really is.
And we need to grapple with it to understand the full weight of these chapters.
I agree, and I think there's a lot more to unpack here.
Oh, for sure.
So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and dive even deeper into these stories.
Sounds good.
But even in this dark moment, God doesn't abandon Cain.
No, not at all.
He confronts him.
Right.
Giving him a chance to own up to it.
He does.
And when Cain's afraid of retribution,
mm-hmm.
God gives him a mark of protection.
He does. It's amazing. Even though Cain did this horrible thing, God still offers him grace and mercy.
It's like God's justice isn't about immediate punishment.
It's not.
It's about accountability.
Yeah.
And ultimately about redemption.
Exactly.
This whole idea of accountability and responsibility really comes into focus when Dr. Phillips digs deeper into the pronouncement to the woman.
Mm.
In Genesis 3:16, you know, it's often seen as a curse.
It is.
But she suggests that it's more about the natural consequences of their choices.
Yeah, that phrase, your desire will be for your husband, but he will rule over you.
Right.
That points to a shift in the dynamics of their relationship.
Yeah.
And it's not about God, like, ordaining male dominance.
Right.
It's about sin distorting our desires.
Yeah.
And creating these power struggles.
So it's not a prescription for how it should be.
No.
But a consequence of what went wrong.
Yes. Yes. And it's not just limited to husbands and wives either.
Mm.
We see these power struggles play out in all kinds of relationships.
It's true. When sin enters the picture, things get messy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that makes me think about how we talked earlier about Adam and Eve wanting to define good and evil for themselves.
Yes.
That desire for control, that's at the root of so many conflicts.
It really is. When we try to take God's place,
right,
set our own rules, it leads to brokenness.
So how do we break free from that?
That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah, how do we escape that temptation to play God?
Well, Dr. Phillips points to God's mercy as the antidote.
Okay.
Even in judgment, God provides a way back.
Yeah.
He covers Adam and Eve with those animal skins,
right,
showing that he still cares.
Even when they've messed up.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it foreshadows the ultimate act of mercy.
It does.
Sending Jesus to die for our sins.
And to restore our relationship with him.
That is so powerful.
It is.
It's like this thread of redemption running through the whole thing.
The whole story, yeah.
Starting with those animal skins.
Yeah.
And culminating in the sacrifice of Christ.
Exactly. And it's important to note that God's grace isn't just about forgiveness. It's about transformation.
Okay.
It's about breaking free from sin.
Right.
And living a life that reflects God's character.
So if we go back to Cain and Abel.
Okay.
How does this idea of grace and transformation apply to them?
Mm.
Because Cain does this horrible thing.
He does.
And he's filled with guilt and fear.
He is.
But God doesn't abandon him.
Right.
He gives him that mark of protection.
He does.
So he won't be killed in revenge.
It's like a second chance,
yeah.
An opportunity to make different choices.
To turn away from the violence.
And embrace a new way of living.
And that's where the genealogy at the end of chapter 4 gets really interesting.
It does. You know, you see these two distinct lineages. The descendants of Cain and the descendants of Seth.
Oh, yeah. I remember noticing that.
It's like two paths unfolding.
Yeah.
One marked by violence and the other by faithfulness.
It is. So the line of Cain, what's that characterized by?
Innovation, worldly success. You know, they build cities, develop new technologies, create music and art. But there's this restlessness to it.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to create their own paradise apart from God.
And that's the danger. When we focus on our own achievements,
yeah,
we lose sight of what really matters.
Our relationship with God.
Exactly. And with each other.
Yeah. And that's evident in the character of Lamech.
Oh, yeah.
One of Cain's descendants.
Right.
He boasts about killing a man.
And then he says that chilling line.
If Cain is avenged 7 times, then Lamech 77 times.
It's like this escalation of violence.
Yeah.
He's taking pride in his ability to inflict pain.
It's awful.
It's a far cry from the mercy and grace that God extended to Cain.
Yeah, it's like a downward spiral into darkness.
It is. It's tragic.
But then you see the line of Seth.
Right.
Which is so different.
It is. It's characterized by faithfulness.
Yeah.
A desire to walk with God.
It's like a glimmer of hope.
It is. And it's through this line that we see the promise of redemption unfolding, leading to the birth of Jesus.
The ultimate expression of God's love.
Yes, exactly.
It's amazing how these ancient stories.
I know, right?
Can still speak to us today.
Yeah.
You know, we see ourselves in Adam and Eve.
Oh, yeah.
The jealousy of Cain.
The pride of Lamech.
These aren't just stories from the past.
No.
They're stories about human nature.
About the consequences of sin.
Yeah.
And about the hope of redemption.
And I'm really excited to explore how these stories can help us navigate our own lives today.
Me too. I think there's a lot of wisdom to unpack here.
Absolutely. So let's move into the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
And see what lessons we can glean from these ancient texts.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we've really been digging deep into these chapters of Genesis, chapters 3 and 4.
Yeah, we have.
And uncovered so much.
Yeah.
About human nature.
Yeah.
The consequences of sin and that hope of redemption that's always there.
That persistent hope.
Yeah, that's always there.
Absolutely.
So now we're going to try to like bridge the gap.
Right.
Between these ancient stories and our modern lives.
Yes. What can we learn from these stories, from Adam and Eve,
right,
from the serpent, from Cain and Abel? What does it all mean?
What does it mean for us today? I think one thing that really struck me was just how relevant the serpent's tactics still feel today.
They do. It's almost uncanny.
Yeah. Appealing to our pride. Distorting the truth,
yeah.
Making sin look so good.
It's like his playbook is still in circulation.
Yeah, we encounter those same strategies all the time.
We do.
In advertising, on social media, and even just like our own doubts and insecurities.
Yes, the serpent might not be in the garden anymore.
Right.
But the temptations, they're still all around us.
They really are. And it makes you realize how important it is to be discerning.
Yeah.
Like questioning those messages.
Absolutely.
Tell us to chase instant gratification.
Right.
Or define our own truth.
Yes, because what seems appealing on the surface can really lead us down a destructive path.
Absolutely. We need something.
You need a foundation.
Yeah, solid foundation.
Yeah, something bigger than ourselves.
To stand on when those voices,
yes,
start to come at us.
Absolutely.
You know, thinking about Eve adding to God's command about the fruit, you must not touch it.
Right.
It made me think about how we try to control everything.
I know. It's like we build these fences around temptation.
Right. We think we can manage every risk.
Avoid failure at all costs.
Yeah. But sometimes those fences just feel like a prison.
I know. It's true.
We get so focused on the don'ts.
Yeah.
That we miss out on the freedom.
And the joy.
Of trusting God.
Yes.
And living in his grace.
It's a good reminder that true freedom doesn't come from control.
It doesn't.
It comes from surrender.
Surrendering to God.
Yes.
That's good.
To a God who knows us and loves us.
Better than we know ourselves.
Absolutely. Better than we know ourselves.
Okay, the pronouncement to the woman.
Yeah.
About her desire for her husband.
Right.
And him ruling over her.
That's a tough one.
It is.
I think it's important to remember that this isn't what God wants for us. Yeah. It's not a prescription for healthy relationships.
Right. It's how sin distorts things.
It is. It describes how sin distorts our desires and creates power struggles.
But the good news is that we can overcome that.
Yes, we can.
Through God's grace.
Absolutely. We can experience true intimacy.
And equality.
Yes. God's grace makes all the difference.
Yeah. So it's not about accepting those dynamics. It's about recognizing them as a consequence of sin.
Yes, that we can overcome.
That we can overcome with God's help.
And we should.
And then Cain and Abel.
Yeah, such a sad story.
So destructive, it just shows how destructive jealousy and resentment can be.
It really does. Cain let those emotions fester.
Yeah, he did. He let them eat him alive.
And it's not just about the consequences for Cain either.
Right, it's the ripple effect, the people around him.
His actions cause pain for everyone around him.
Yeah, so what can we learn from that? How can we avoid falling into that same trap?
I think we need to deal with our negative emotions.
Okay.
Bring them to God.
Not let them fester?
No, not let them fester. Let God help us process those feelings.
Choose forgiveness.
Yes. Forgiveness over resentment.
Even when it's hard.
Even when it's so hard.
Because think about Lamech.
Oh, gosh. I know.
His boast about vengeance. That's the opposite of what Jesus teaches.
It's like two paths.
Yeah, two different paths.
Lamech consumed by pride.
Thirst for revenge.
And Jesus
calling us to forgive.
Yeah, calling us to break that cycle of violence.
So as we wrap up here, what are some key takeaways that we can remember from this?
You know, I think the biggest thing is just how relevant these stories still are.
Yeah, I agree.
They were written so long ago, but they speak to us today.
Yeah.
We all face temptation.
We do.
We struggle with our emotions.
We do.
We experience the consequences of our choices.
Yeah, but there's hope.
There is. God's grace is always there.
Always there.
Offering forgiveness.
Healing.
A path toward wholeness.
Yeah. These stories remind us that we're not alone.
We're not.
God is with us.
Every step of the way.
Guiding us. Strengthening us.
Yeah.
Offering us a way out of darkness.
And into his light.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll be back soon with another exploration.
See you next time.
Of ancient wisdom for our modern lives. Until then, may you walk in that freedom and grace that God offers.
Yes, walk in freedom.